Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am your host, Cy Kellett. And our guest this hour is Dr. George Delgado. And when Dr. Delgado's here, in general, it's a pro-life open forum, and that is what it is today, pro-life open forum. If you have questions about life in any of its stages, what are the ethical treatments that we owe to one another, and what things cross the line into unethical, immoral, or maybe even evil that we do to one another, this is your hour. 888-318-7884 is the number. Dr. Delgado is prepared to take questions about the end of life, the kind of growing mentality of suicide and euthanasia. And if you have questions in that regard, maybe questions about durable power of attorney and wills and those kinds of things, those are welcome. At the beginning of life, questions having to do with in vitro fertilization or contraception or abortion, all of those questions are welcome. And then, of course, throughout life, there are many difficulties that people face, and people have to make decisions about things like life support and all that. Those questions welcome as well. 888-318-7884. If you've always wanted to talk to an expert on life issues, this is your hour. If you've been saving that question up, 888-318-7884. Dr. Delgado is the medical director of the Culture of Life Family Healthcare. He's board certified in family medicine and in hospice and palliative medicine. He's also completed the certificate program in healthcare ethics offered by the National Catholic Bioethics Center, where we here at Catholic Answers send anybody who asks us a real stumper as far as bioethics. They get sent there to the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Dr. Delgado is also the president of the Steno Institute. Dr. Delgado, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. It's wonderful to be here.
What is the Steno Institute? I know this is a new thing. I didn't know that you were the president of that.
Yes, the Steno Institute is a new research institute that I founded in order to support, fund, and conduct pro-life medical and psychological research, initially highly focused on abortion pill reversal to further our understanding of different therapies for abortion pill reversal for women who take mifepristone in particular, the so-called abortion pill or pill abortion, and change their minds. So this gives them a second chance at choice. So we already have published 3 articles in the peer-reviewed medical literature, and we're looking now designing a large randomized controlled study, which would be a scientifically very rigorous study to look at the different progesterone protocols to see which ones work the best at saving babies from medical abortion and which one have the fewest burdens to the women. So we're very, very excited about that. As we go forward, then we will expand our reach into other areas of pro-life research. The reason there's a need for this is because, unfortunately, there's a huge bias in the medical research industry, just like there is in medicine itself. There's a huge bias against life. And so a lot of good researchers just can't get their works published, or they can't get money to fund studies. They can't get the grants they need to conduct really good research that is unbiased and that looks at the questions surrounding life. And so what we're left with then is a very biased literature when it comes to topics like abortion and contraception, euthanasia, and other life issues. So we're hoping to be a light in that area.
So you are a pioneer, and pioneers draw a little bit of lightning, and you certainly have gotten your share of hits in the media. You're an irenic person by nature, I think, and it doesn't seem to have bothered you. But are you getting any sense that the wider medical community is at least willing to admit that this abortion pill reversal may have something to it?
I am. We are seeing indications now because a couple of reasons. One is the quotes they put out in articles, and that the latest one was in NPR, where two of my biggest critics, Dr. Daniel Grossman, who's been a longtime critic, and now Dr. Mitchell Krennan, he's at UC Davis, they both admitted that women do change their minds after taking the mifepristone, that some women do change their minds. Previously, they had said that, or at least Dr. Grossman had said that no, women rarely, if ever, change their minds. So now they're changing their minds about that. And the other thing is that Dr. Krenin, who is, we actually cite him in our articles using some of the information from his abortion studies to prove our points. He's now said he's taken upon himself. He says he does not believe that abortion pill reversal works, so he's going to conduct his own study. And he's apparently already started enrolling patients. He got funding from the Society of Family Planning, which is a strong pro-contraception, pro-abortion group. And he's going to enroll 40 women, he says, who are already signed up to have surgical abortions. And he's going to give them mifepristone, the abortion pill, and then see if they have abortions. Half the group will get mifepristone only. Half the group will get mifepristone and progesterone. And then he'll see if they have abortions or not. The ones who do have abortions, then they will be done. The ones who don't have abortions, then he's going to subject them to surgical abortions. So those poor women will be assaulted twice, and as well as their unborn babies. So he's doing this with the expressed intent to disprove that progesterone reversal of mifepristone works. So it's actually surprising that this got past the ethics board at UC Davis, but we'll see what that comes up with. In the meantime, we're planning our own ethical study, which will be many more than 40 patients. He's just going to have 40 patients. We're going to have hundreds of patients, hopefully about 900 patients. And this study will compare two active treatment groups, and that'll be different progesterone doses. There will be no placebo group like in his group, and there will be no surgical abortion awaiting those who survive. There'll be a lifetime of goodness and happiness for those who do survive.
Amen. Amen to that. Okay. So that was creepy when you describe what that, it's macabre, really.
Yes.
And to think of that, I have to just share a thing with you. I was up in Marin County, and not everybody's pro-life up there. I don't know if you know that. But I had said something about some of the evil being done in universities, and a university scientist was very offended by that. But I wish I had known this. I mean, some of the things being done in the name of science are just horrible, just horrific. And that is one of them. That's awful to think that that's being done at a public university here in California. But not surprising, it is California. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Just one more question for you, because you have a lot of calls here, people that want to get to you. A lot of different bills now. It seems that with the attainment of the Supreme Court by Judge Brett Kavanaugh, people have been emboldened to create cases for the Supreme Court to review now. And so you see a lot of states passing laws. Georgia, the state of Georgia, has a heartbeat bill. Can you just give us an idea of what all that is about and where it stands and what you think of it?
Yes. So several states, and now the latest Georgia, have either passed or are considering passing a bill that states that if a heartbeat can be seen on ultrasound, then an abortion cannot be performed. It would make abortion illegal after the time a heartbeat is visualized on ultrasound. And so this, of course, would cut the window way down for abortions. Now, many abortions are already done even before a heartbeat is seen, because many abortions are done earlier and earlier, but this would cut out a significant number of them.
About how old is the developing fetus? I don't even know if we've reached the stage of fetus when you see the heartbeat. How old are we?
Yeah. So going by what's called ultrasound or gestational age, usually between about 6 weeks. And so that would be, that's when you can see the heartbeat.
Yep.
And so we know that the heart actually probably starts beating at 21 days of embryologic age, which is about 5 weeks of ultrasound or gestational age.
Okay.
So, and sometimes you can see a little earlier than 6 weeks, but about 6 weeks is a safe way to say it. And so there have been many public people who have expressed their displeasure with this bill, including some Hollywood stars who wrote an open letter saying that that the state of Georgia should be boycotted. And that's significant because the state has now become the leading state for feature films because of its generous tax incentives. And so Georgia has been attracting a lot of Hollywood people and a lot of movies. The letter was signed by Alec Baldwin, and it was headlined by Alyssa Milano. So on the heels of that, there was a letter written by two low-level executives from Amazon and Coca-Cola, who were just, you know, managers or directors, that say that they oppose the legislation. Well, the mainstream media ran with this, according to LifeSite News, and proclaimed that Amazon and Coca-Cola were opposing these bills. And, of course, Amazon is one of the biggest companies in the world, and Coca-Cola is based in Atlanta, Georgia. So both of these were falsehoods, because these were individual people, and the people from Coca-Cola did respond, and they said that, no, this was just a person who's expressing her own personal beliefs, and that this does not reflect the wishes of the Coca-Cola company. Amazon has not commented on it. So just another example of how the mainstream media are biased against pro-life people and biased against pro-life causes, and how they just take something and run with it and don't do any fact-checking. So more fake news from the liberal media, basically.
I'm surprised at Hollywood, though. You usually think of Hollywood as a very pro-life place with lots of pro-life
people.
Yeah,
pro-life and objective in everything they do and say, and very careful at checking out sources, I know.
I mean, you know, the truth is, I'm sure there are many pro-life people in Hollywood, but they're not going to probably raise their head.
They're under the radar because they fear for their own safety and their
jobs. Yeah, right. We've got to take a quick break. Dr. George Delgado is our guest, and we do have lots of callers for Dr. Delgado, which we will get to immediately when we come back. It is a pro-life open forum today on Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884. The number right back after this.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's street evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You know, I have never seen women who want to be equal absolutely degrading themselves. And yet the media degrades your nature, your beauty as a woman, your goodness. Let us pray at some point our dear Lord touches their hearts.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Pro-Life Open Forum this hour with Dr. George Delgado. Dr. Delgado, well-trained in several fields of medicine and in ethics, ready to take your calls. Let us start with Reezy. And I don't have a location for Reezy, but are you there, Reezy?
Hello. My question is, why do women want abortions, and why was abortion created?
All right, Reezy, thank you. How old are you, Reezy?
Nine.
Okay. All right, very good. Thank you for the question.
Well, Reezy, that's a very insightful question. It means that you're seeing things for what they are, and you're asking really, really good questions that get to the heart of the matter. So the first one is, why do women want abortions? There are many, many reasons for that, that different women want abortions. I think, though, underlying it all is that sometimes when women are pregnant, they have babies inside of them, they only see the hard parts of what having a baby is all about, and they don't see all of the goodness and the joy like they would see if they looked in your eyes and they saw such a wonderful 9-year-old. So sometimes for adults, It's hard for us to see the good things that are going on and that could possibly come from other people, and we only see the hard parts, the parts that might be extra work. And also a lot of times women who have these babies inside of them, they don't have people around them like their husbands or their parents or friends who help them do the right thing. And when you have people around you and you have people in our society all around the world telling them that it's okay to have an abortion, then sometimes they don't see that they need to make a good choice and choose life, and then they'll make a bad choice and choose abortion. So I think that's what happens with a lot of these women. And the reason why abortions were created was because there are some people who don't always follow God's plan and protect human life like we all should, because God in the Bible tells us to. And so they try to make their own plans, and either because they just want to hurt people or because they think they know better than God, they created different abortion procedures and ways to help women who want to have abortions. So that's how and why abortions were created, and I think why some women do have abortions. So I think the best we can do is, whenever we can, is to tell people how great life is. And you can tell people how great it is to be a kid, and we can tell them that life is always good, and that when there are tough times in life, that's when we need to have good friends and family around us and rely on God for His support, so that people don't make the wrong choices. Does that make sense, Reezy?
I also asked this question because I watched a movie named Unplanned.
Oh,
you did.
I have not seen that movie yet. Have you seen that, Dr. Delgado?
I have seen that movie twice, yes. And it's a very good movie. And you could see that what happens when somebody makes bad choices, and that woman who had two abortions and then she worked at the abortion center, how even she could change her life around as long as she accepted God's help, and she did. And look how God was able to change her life around. And now I think she has her eighth baby on the way, the real person in real life, Abby Johnson, and she has become a really strong voice for life. So that Unplanned movie, I think, is a great example how one person can make a big difference and how anybody can turn their lives around and start to do good, even if they've been doing bad things up to then.
Reezy, thank you very, very much for that call. Thank you for mentioning Unplanned, the movie, because of course I should have asked Dr. Delgado about that. I got to go see that movie. I have been a little bit out of touch the last couple of days, but my understanding is it did really well in its opening weekend.
Yes, it sure did. But don't delay too long, because these movies, if they don't get a sufficient number of patrons going to see them, they shut them down pretty quickly. But right now it is increasing and spreading, so... But now's the time to go see it this weekend, certainly.
All right. Let us go to Joseph in New Orleans, Louisiana. Joseph, your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Hello, Dr. Delgado.
Hi.
My question refers, yes, not to the bioethics aspect of being pro-life, but rather to the justice and peace aspect. I'm so impressed, you know, that we have infrastructure and groups such as Pope Paul's Institute, NCBC, National Catholic Bioethics Center, Rachel Swinier, the Priest for Life, for dealing with bioethics. But do we have similar infrastructure dealing with nuclear war, dealing with suicides among veterans? We have 22 suicides among veterans a day, that's 7,000, and the mechanism is very similar to abortion. These people feel guilty, you know, feel guilty for having participated in our wars and commit suicide. So that's my answer.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. I've often thought that, and I think I've maybe mentioned it on the radio show once or twice, that I see psychologically lots of parallels between a woman who chooses abortion and a person who chooses suicide. It's very much a situation of a person who's desperate and who feels that he or she has no other options other than death. And that's exactly what a suicidal person, where that person is. The only difference is that the suicidal person takes his or her own life, while the abortion intent person takes the life of her unborn baby. But very similar psychological dynamics, and I would love to see more research on that. There, as far as for suicide, there's lots of different resources available. If you do an internet search, you'll see suicidepreventionlifeline.org, crisistextline.org. Lots of great organizations where people can get real-time help by texting or telephone call. Because as you know, all it takes is one voice or one text of support for a person to say, okay, I'm okay right now. I'm not going to take my life. There also is a suicide hotline, especially for part of the International Bipolar Foundation, because people with bipolar disorder often have a lot of suicide, and you can look at that. For teenagers, I would recommend, who are having suicidal thoughts, I would recommend youcantbeerased.com, and that's a letter U, can't, C-A-N-T, be erased. And be erased is all run together. So, but I'm sure if you just type that in, you'll get it. And that's an organization founded by a friend of mine, Luke Maxwell, here in San Diego, who, as a teenager, was depressed and unbeknownst to his family, and he attempted to commit suicide by driving the family van into another oncoming vehicle. He was not wearing a seatbelt because, of course, he didn't want to be saved. Miraculously, he only had a scratch on his arm, and miraculously, the man driving the other car was not seriously injured. So from this, of course, Luke had to pay his debt to society and get through all that, but he's become a great advocate for teens and young people who are burdened with suicidal thoughts, what we call suicidal ideation. And so he has a great website called youcantbeerased.com, and I recommend that for any teens who are having difficulties with suicidal thoughts.
Joseph, thank you very, very much. I hope that was helpful. Luke's brother, Zach, works here right in this studio with us several days a week running the video cameras. I don't know if you knew that, Dr. Delgado.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Zach's a good fella. Let us go now to Jasmine in San Jose, California, listening to EWTN on Channel 130 Sirius Satellite Radio. Jasmine, your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Hi. I have a question about women who have PCOS and taking hormonal pills, such as Clomid, that cause ovulation. Is that deemed as something that's pro-life and something that is not playing with life, you know, kind of like playing like God kind of thing? Or is that appropriate to do?
Okay. Now, by PCOS, do you mean polycystic ovarian syndrome?
Correct.
Okay, good. So just so that everybody knows, also known as PCOS. Let's just give our listeners a quick thumbnail sketch of what PCOS is. PCOS is a very common cause of infertility, and it's a situation where women have a hormonal imbalance. They often have increased male hormones and will have excess hair sometimes and will often have cysts on the ovary. That's why it's called polycystic ovarian syndrome. And they often do not ovulate, so they have very long cycles, very long time between periods. And so anything, any kind of treatment that is given in order to correct the defect, then as long as it doesn't have any other bad side effects or shortcomings or ethical problems, would be ethically appropriate. So a common way to treat this for women who want to conceive is to give them clomiphene, also known as Clomid. And Clomid helps to cause ovulation, so it kind of gets the cycles going again. So that's perfectly ethically fine because it's correcting the underlying defect, and it's not leading to, it's not hurting or destroying the reproductive system or replacing it or circumventing it like some other therapeutic options do, such as in vitro fertilization. Another medication that's often used is metformin because it's a medicine for diabetes, but it also helps women who have this to ovulate because there's a link between PCOS and diabetes. And sometimes a medicine called anastrozole, which is a medication actually used for breast cancer, and it works in the same way as Clomid. They actually both block estrogen receptors in the ovary, and so the ovary has less estrogen effect. That causes more of a hormone in the brain called FSH to be made, and then you abruptly withdraw the medications. That extra FSH then can induce help promote ovulation. So that's how they work, and they're perfectly fine to be used, and we use them all the time.
Thanks, Jasmine. I hope that was helpful to you. It is Pro-Life Open Forum this hour on Catholic Answers Live. Medical Director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare is here as our guest, Dr. George Delgado. If you've got a question for him, 888-318-7884.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
In his new audio presentation, The Very First Fathers, apologist Jimmy Akin takes you on a tour of the earliest Christian writings outside the New Testament, from the most famous figures and most notable works to those lesser known but no less important. This pivotal time in the development of the early church is revealed in fascinating detail. Jimmy shows how, even in the first century after the resurrection, it was necessary to defend and explain truths that are still under attack today, such as the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and the perpetual virginity of Mary. The Very First Fathers is a compelling look at the dawn of the Christian age and edifying listening for anyone who wants to understand and defend the full truth of Catholicism. Order your copy of The Very First Fathers today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew she wanted those things, that in them, somehow, she would find God. Over the years, as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
When have you come out of your comfort zone?
We want to hear about it on tomorrow's Take Two with Jerry and Debbie at noon Eastern.
Now let's return to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Pro-Life Open Forum. Dr. George Delgado, our guest, and the phone line's practically full. Oh, we have one line open, though. If you've got a question about life in any of its stages and about the proper, charitable, respectful treatment of human life in any of its stages, 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. We go now to an anonymous caller. Anonymous, your question for Dr. Delgado.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, thank you, Cy, and thank you, Doctor. My question is in regards to my daughter who was diagnosed at age 18 with significant ovarian failure, where they said at the time that literally she's got a handful of eggs maybe in there, and she's 25 now. Adoption considerations aside, is it less immoral, if you will, or is it morally allowable for her to attempt carrying a pregnancy with an already frozen embryo that is in limbo out there? Not to justify why there has been the creation of excessive embryos, but perhaps to offer then a potentially full life to that egg that's, I mean, the embryo that's frozen?
Doctor?
Yes. So the situation just described has often been called frozen embryo adoption. These babies have also been termed snowflake babies. And there are some problems here that Catholic Church has not formally made a, given a position on this, but they have implied and certainly have they've made references to this. Specifically, Pope John Paul II, now Saint Pope John Paul II, he said that the ethical situation involving these frozen embryos is absurd, implying that there's really no good ethical solution to these. So I liken it to a situation where you squeeze the toothpaste out of the tube and you're asking yourself, can I get it back in the tube? The answer is you really can't. So for some ethical situations, there is no good resolution. So for these frozen embryos, my opinion, and of many Orthodox Catholic ethicists, is that the frozen embryo donation or adoption should not be supported. And although the people like your daughter have very noble intentions, that it still is a violation of God's design of how a human being should be procreated, first of all, because they were procreated in an unethical way, which, of course, your daughter had nothing to do, but also that the human embryonic person has a right to be gestated in the womb of his or her biologic mother. And by gestated, I mean by carried in the womb. And that's because that relationship is a very privileged relationship. It's a very unique relationship like no other. The intimacy of that relationship is like no other. The human embryonic person and the human adult person, you know, literally they share some of their blood. Some of the blood actually crosses over. You find DNA of the mother in the blood of the preborn baby. You have find DNA of the preborn baby in the blood of the mother. There are all sorts of physiologic intimate reactions and relationships there. So because of all that, again, this is my opinion, but I think the Church has suggested this, that the embryo adoption is not an ethically correct response or solution to that, the problem of the frozen embryos. So I think traditional adoption of an already born baby would make the most sense for your daughter.
Okay, I hear you. All right, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Anonymous. That it does seem that this has been a difficult problem, and Anonymous and anybody else interested should know that the Church has really had to wrestle with this. But the more and more I hear both theologians and ethicists and doctors who are Catholic coming around to the view that you just expressed, is that it seems like that's congealing as a view. Do you share that impression with me?
That's my impression too, yeah, as people have studied it. And, you know, their initial reaction, oh, gosh, you have to do something and you have to, you know, rescue these frozen embryos, which is the normal reaction that we should all have as good Christians. But sometimes people act on intention only without knowing all of the ethical ramifications. And so now I think they've studied it, they've reflected on it, and more people, you're right, are coming around to that viewpoint.
Up next, Billy in Massachusetts, listening on EWTN Radio. Billy, your question for Dr. George Delgado. Hi, Billy, are you there with us?
Hello, can you hear me?
We can, yes. Your question for Dr. Delgado.
Hey, thanks for having me on. You know, often we hear about a woman's decision to have an abortion. It seems to me like it's usually, you know, after at least one other decision that violates Church teachings, for example, premarital sex. I was hoping you guys could just talk about, you know, what a man's role and his responsibility is in you know, leading up to an increase in abortion.
That's a great question, Billy, because the man has not only been forgotten, but he's been marginalized and demasculinized and trivialized. And that's been a very, very clever strategy by the devil to attack the family and to attack the woman-man union. So there's been this simultaneous, multi-pronged attack against the family. First of all, minimizing the role of the father, increasing the rate of divorce, and then once marriage was made less consequential, then isolating the woman from the man by saying that it's a woman's choice, it's a woman's body. And the men, however, are in many ways more, just as much or more at fault, because the Bible tells us that the man is should be the servant leader of the family. Ephesians chapter 5 says that a man should love his wife the way Christ loved the church, and Christ loved the church by dying for the church and by leading the church. So men have not been dying for their women and have not been leading their women. Instead, they've turned from being protectors to now being predators, sexual predators. Even when it's consensual sex, it often the man is a predator and then fails to take responsibility for his actions. So men have allowed this to happen. They've allowed the whole woman's right, woman's body to take precedence and sort of absolving themselves by saying, well, I'll support her in whatever she does. That's not what a woman needs to hear at that critical point when she's thinking about having abortion. Instead, the man should say, no, we're going to work together, and we're going to protect the life of our unborn child, and we're going to take care of our unborn child, and I'm going to take care of you. That's the protector part, and that's the servant leader part that is now missing in man and in society. And so I think we as strong men in our society need to bring other men around, and we need to preach that message that men once again have to be servant leaders, and that means sacrificing, but it also means leading. It means standing up and saying, no, this is wrong. It is unjust to kill our preborn girls and our preborn boys. It's unjust to kill our children. And I think women want that, and they need it, and as long as it's righteous, sacrificial leadership, then women will respond to that, because that's been lacking, and I think that's the way we are designed to interact one with the other. How's that sound?
That's great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Billy. There is something about our culture that has made men particularly squeamish about having views, like almost like you're not supposed to have. They say, no, that's wrong.
Absolutely.
That shocks people when you say something like that. Like, who are you? Who are you to decide what's right and what's wrong? Right now, we got a free ebook for you over at our Facebook page. Just go to the Catholic Answers Facebook page and you can have it free. Cleansing Fire, Purgatory in Scripture, History, and the Church. Cleansing Fire, Purgatory in Scripture, History, and the Church for free ebook right now. Catholic Answers Facebook page.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
You have this a beautiful compassion and an affirmation of every caller. You zone right in to each person's need, and then you ask all of us to pray for that person, and I do. I just think you really, really have a great ministry. You just really are tonic and concentrated multiple vitamins for all of us spiritually.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Dr. George Delgado is our guest this hour, medical director at Culture of Life Family Healthcare, a board-certified physician in family medicine and in hospice and palliative care, and also somewhat of a, what shall we call it, a lightning rod for negative attention in the Washington Post and on National Public Radio, that's a horrible burden to bear, not to be popular on National Public Radio. And it all has to do with the fact that you are a pioneer and now you're a community of physicians who's kind of developing around your work to reverse the effects of taking the first stage of the abortion pill. So a woman might take the abortion pill and decide, no, I don't want to do this. I want this baby to live. And now she can go to abortion pill reversal. Is it .com?
It's now abortionpillrescue.com.
Abortionpillrescue.com, and have very good hope, have well-founded hope that the procedure might be reversed and that the baby might well live. And that's what you're doing over at the Steno Institute, president of the Steno Institute now, in order to share that knowledge. Man, people don't like it, though. People do not like this idea of, hey, we had already marked that baby for death. We cannot have you now turning around and saving that baby.
That's right. They're forgetting that the only indelible mark is that on the soul, that their indelible mark can be reversed.
So they, in other words, they don't get to play God.
That's right.
Amen, brother. Let us go then to our next caller for Dr. Delgado. We go to Anonymous. Anonymous caller, you are welcome, Anonymous. Your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is, I was put on birth control probably like 7 years ago, but for what my OBGYN told me were medical reasons. I was having a lot of issues with cysts on my ovaries, and they were rupturing, and it was extremely, extremely painful. I was having to take time off work and stuff, and they told me that that would help get my hormonal issues under control and help with the cysts. And just to give a little more background, I guess the reason I called to ask is I've been married 6 years now, so I think that plays into the question too, but I've been kind of now sort of coming to realize maybe this is something I really need to think deeper about and probably confess or maybe talk to my priest about, and I was just curious what your thoughts are and the Catholic teaching on this.
Thank you, Anonymous.
Sure, and how old are you?
I'm 31, and I was put on the birth control about 7 years ago.
Okay.
And again, been married for 6 years.
All right. So, you know, the birth control pill can be used in some instances therapeutically, but we have to take into account also intent. So if a person's intent to go on it was to treat cysts, but also for contraception, then that clearly would be immoral, and that would be something you should confess and get off of it right away. If the only intent was to help with these painful cysts, then you have to look at it, is this the best way to treat for that? And there are several layers to that too. We always have known, or at least highly suspected, that women, at least on the low-dose birth control pills, we know that they can ovulate. And we know that some women do get pregnant, so then the question arises, well, if we know they can ovulate, and we know that some of them get pregnant and carry on to term, are there instances of pregnancies occurring and being aborted very early? And that the answer to that is almost certainly yes. And I would say myself, definitely yes. And the only thing we're not sure about is what percentage of them. And the more I read about this and the more studies are coming out, and there's a new position paper coming out from the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, of which I'm on the board. I got a sneak preview. It's looking like this is actually probably much more common than we thought before. And that is because with these low-dose birth control pills, they don't always inhibit ovulation. That is, they don't always stop the egg from being released. But we do know that they probably do affect the quality of the ovulation and the amount of progesterone produced, because when a woman ovulates, that where the place where the egg is released is called the follicle. That once the egg is released, that follicle becomes something called the corpus luteum, which produces progesterone. And the progesterone is necessary for a lot of things, for the egg to make it down the tube. And then if the egg is fertilized and then the sperm and the egg unite to become a human person, then for that human person to move down the fallopian tube and to implant into the uterus on around day 5 to 8 of life. But that uterus, the lining, is prepared and made hospitable by the progesterone. So if these birth control pills allow ovulation but affect the quality of ovulation, and by doing that there's less of a hormone called LH to stimulate progesterone production, then you'll have lower progesterone levels. And we know that low progesterone levels leads to miscarriage, i.e. abortion. So, and that's a proven fact. When you take pregnant rats and early on and you cut out their ovaries, they'll abort right away. So I think you can pretty safely say that women on birth control pills are at a very significant risk of having early chemical abortions. And so therefore, that to me is too big of a risk to take in order to treat these painful cysts. Instead, the better treatment would be to be on progesterone, which is the natural hormone, and to time it so that you take the progesterone during the part of the cycle where progesterone is normally produced, and therefore you would not hinder any early pregnancy. You actually would help it. And so that would be the proper treatment in my eyes that would be ethically safe and appropriate and would probably be safer, because we know that women on birth control pills increase their risk of breast cancer also. And so you'd be avoiding those kinds of things, also avoiding the side effects of depression and some lesser risks of liver problems, as well as psychosocial problems with the birth control pill, in that we know that studies have shown that women who are taking the pill will be more attracted to a certain type of man compared to when that same woman is not taking the pill. So therefore, if you got married and you married your husband when you were off the pill, now that you're on the pill, you may not be as attracted to him hormonally and physiologically than you would be if you were off of it. Same thing goes for a woman who's on the birth control pill when she selects her mate. They get married. Afterwards, she comes off the birth control pill. She may no longer be as attracted to that same man, but just because of pheromones and different hormones and things that go on in her body. So all of those things wrapped up would, in my mind, say that's not the best way to treat your cysts.
Okay, thank you. That was very helpful. I had not heard a huge majority of that, so that's extremely helpful to know that. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm glad I was able to help.
May I just ask real quick, if she finds for example, maybe a pro-life OBGYN, there will be other ways to treat those cysts?
Yes, there definitely are other ways, and that's what I suggested there with the progesterone timed.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Anonymous, thank you very, very much for that call. We got another anonymous caller. And you also are very welcome, Anonymous. Your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Hello.
Hello.
I've got a question for you about ethics. I think you may have actually addressed this in the last call.
Okay.
And that is, in a marriage of people who are, say, older, let's call it young 50s, where it may be medically unsafe actually to conceive a child, is there an ethical issue with, say, attempting to protect the woman's health by using birth control, or am I just...
Okay. All right, just for those who couldn't hear, because the connection is not great, if you have a couple in their 50s, the woman has some situation that might not make it safe for her to carry a child, is it all right in that situation to use birth control preventatively? Dr. Delgado.
Okay. So, at age in their 50s, it's going to be very unusual for a woman to conceive because usually they're perimenopausal. But I have no women in their very early 50s who've conceived. But I think we could actually open that question and say, if there's a woman who would be at health risks by getting pregnant, whether it's because of medical illness or because of age, would it be ethically acceptable to use birth control? And the answer there is very clear. There's no wishy-washy gray area here, even though some people like to introduce the gray area, is no, absolutely not. There's no room for contraception in those patients at all, because contraception, remember, is something that we consider intrinsically evil. That means it's always evil, regardless of the context or the circumstances. So what about these people who would be at a legitimate high risk of if they were to become pregnant. Well, they do have an option, and that option is natural family planning. So natural family planning, when used judiciously, justly, in times when there's a very serious reason to avoid pregnancy, that's when a couple can use natural family planning and be ethically in a very, very safe zone. So one of the very effective, effective approved methods of natural family planning, the studies have shown that when used correctly, they're as effective as birth control pills to avoid pregnancy. That would be perfectly fine if the couple, in prayerful consideration, felt that the risk of pregnancy is too high to tolerate, and therefore that they should not conceive.
Anonymous, that helps you?
Yeah, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you very much. I feel like whenever we mention natural family planning, we really need to stress it, as you have, the powerful nature of this, that I know that there are many people who say, oh, you're still on the rhythm method or something, and that is not the case. So could you tell us a little bit about about natural family planning, and what are we talking about? How does it work, and why does it work?
Sure. So natural family planning, other terms that you may hear for it would be fertility awareness care, fertility planning, and other similar terms like that. And what it is, it's using the body's own biomarkers, signs that the body gives out, or using technology, for example, like ovulation predictor kits, to know when the woman is fertile and when she is not. And so these are highly, highly accurate, and there are different rules and schema for using it depending on what you're using. Some of the biomarkers, the most common one used is the cervical mucus, which mucus is produced by the cervix, and then it trickles down through the vagina. And so when a woman goes to the bathroom and she wipes, she will notice if there's mucus or not and can learn how to judge that mucus and to grade that mucus in order to chart it and to then determine whether or not she's fertile at that time. The other common biomarker is what's called the basal body temperature, the temperature when a woman first awakens in the morning. And that basal body temperature does not predict fertility per se, but what it does is it indicates the woman has, when there's what's called a thermal shift and the temperature goes up, that she has already ovulated, because progesterone is produced after ovulation, and that causes the temperature to rise. So using those biomarkers and sometimes urine tests of LH and estradiol, then a woman then can very accurately predict when she's fertile. And so if she does not want to conceive, then she avoids those days and usually adds a couple of days at the end of that period to be extra cautious. And then she can have intercourse on all the other days of the month, which are many, many days, and then be confident that she will not conceive. Now, the other beauty of this is that it's a month-to-month decision. It's not you take a pill every day and you never think about it again, or you get an injection and you never think about it, or you have a ring or whatever. It's a day-to-day or month-to-month decision. Every month, the couple prayerfully considers, should we conceive or not? And if they find that they have a just reason not to, then they're using that method appropriately from an ethical standpoint, and they decide not to. The other beauty of it is for couples that then say, hey, we want to conceive, then, of course, they're going to focus their efforts of intercourse during the fertile times, and that increases their chance of conceiving compared to just having an intercourse any random day of the month. So that's the beauty and sort of the essence of fertility care awareness, and also known as natural family planning, and why it's such a great way for couples to grow closer and to be able to manage their fertility, co-manage it with God, really, instead of just trying to hijack the process either by circumventing, destroying, or taking it over completely.
And one of my favorite things about it is it's so respectful of the woman's body. It's not adding anything. We're not making any biological changes. We're just respecting her natural cycles. And a man is doing what he should do if he loves her. Just a little bit of restraint, a few days of restraint.
That's right. It's being a servant leader. Exactly.
Right. It's good for both. And it's all natural. And the only reason the world hasn't embraced it is because the Catholic Church has. Dr. George Delgado has been our guest. You can find him at abortionpillrescue.com, his services in that regard. Dr. Delgado, thank you so much. It's always great when we have you on.
Great to be here. Thanks.
2 hours of open forum tomorrow, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.